Hi, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are
East-West Audio Body Shop.
Okay, tell the truth. You're still eating all your kids' candy, aren't you? You've got it hidden in there. Well, let me tell you something. We've got a really sweet show this week because we have on our show a big star, a guy who's been on TV, does trailers and commercials, and was just a star in a big movie in the world. Fred Melamed will be right here.
I'm going to share an Whittam's World that I recorded for Edge Studio, and this sucker is about, it sounds good, it is good. That's it. Plain and simple. That's what I'll be sharing with you guys this week. We're going to switch it around and have a little bit of fun with that.
And we want to hear your questions. You can email us at ewabshop@gmail.com and join us in the chat room. That's where all the fun is.
That's right. If you join us live, you can be there. And if you can't watch it live, watch it on YouTube. But we'll be on this Monday night at 6 p.m. in the West.
And 9 o'clock in the East. And we'll see you then.
He's the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He's a voice actor and the home studio master, hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen, and the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Good evening. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East-West Audio Body Shop. Episode 115. Take one.
This is the one and only take, folks.
We got it right here. We actually took some time and went, let's make sure we do all these things. Treat it like a business trip, because it is.
All right, don't build up people's expectations now.
Oh, okay. Well, it's working. That's all I care about. So, tomorrow, Election Day. Get rid of these freaking ads, for crying out loud. Although I'm sure some of you are making good money doing political ads.
That's right.
Continue on.
I'm enjoying not watching your ads. Congratulations on all of you doing work that I'm not watching and or listening to.
Right. That's there has to be a fine art to that. I'd like to do political ads, but, I guess there's a certain style you have to have. You have to sound like you're really angry.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, we got a great show tonight, and I know you're all here. I mean, there's a ton of you here already, and because we've got Fred Melamed with us tonight. We have been so looking forward. This guy is great. He's smart, accomplished, and he's got some great stuff to talk to you about tonight. I mean, we'll talk about In a World and things like that, but we've got some other topics we wanted to toss around with him, and he was very gracious to join us tonight, so he'll be with us in about half an hour or so. So
yep.
Don't go away, because we got lots of other stuff. I mean, we're gonna throw you a Whittam's World a little bit later. We're going to switch things up for a week. I think we'll start alternating around, and I'll do a tip of the week every other week, and George will do his Whittam's World, and then I get to talk at the top of the show for once.
Yeah, man. About time. 115 episodes later, let's let Dan lead things off.
Okay, good.
Go for it.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about World Voices Organization, as people now tune out in major droves. As you recall, about a year and a half ago, we started up World Voices.
Hey, Dan, before you start on your before you start...
Yes.
Back down the input gain on something. It's clipping when you get very exuberant.
When I get exuberant.
A little distorted slightly.
Of course, we have to remember, I now have Frankenmike has returned.
He is back.
He's glued together and taped together, but he's back.
In honor of Wes Dooley, who we're going to have on a future show.
Yes. And you're going to really enjoy that.
You sound good now, so go for it.
Okay, good. All right. Well, you see, it's a ribbon mic. You don't do a ribbon mic really close unless you're being really intimate with it.
That's right.
So I have to actually back off. So now I sound like I'm on radio in 1945. But anyway, we started World Voices about a year and a half ago, and it is an industry association. And an industry association can be a lot of different things. What we really want it to be is a voice of this industry, this cottage industry we have of voice actors with home studios all over the place, including all these people in the 10 square mile area where a lot of the big money stuff is done. And they should be joining us as well. We want their opinions and we want everybody's voice to make this industry a much better place. We had our first annual meeting a couple weeks ago, which was, it was the culmination of something I had been wanting to do for 30 years. Cause I remember writing a paper, or actually I think it was an exam when I was taking political science in college, about the virtual town meeting and the technology was about to probably be there. And this was before the internet, but we actually had a virtual town meeting. We had 50 people in the chat room. We used our chat room here for our eWebs chat room for it. And we did a Google Hangout and we had the executive board tell everybody what's going on. We took votes. They reelected us as the executive board for another year, which was nice. But it was really exciting. It was a lot of fun. It was great to have everybody talking at us at the same time. But we got some great ideas and we're moving forward with it. And one of the things, so people understand a little bit more about what we're about and dealing with industry issues. We have a bunch of what we like to call best practices on our website. And if you go to worldvo.org, you can look at some of our best practices. And one of them has to do with voiceover coaches and demo producers. Now, this is an issue I think that we really need to deal with. And as an industry, we all need to be on the same page with this because there are a lot of guys out there who are, you know, I'm a coach, I'm a demo producer, I'm this, I'm that. And there are some very good people out there who are very, very legitimate. But in order to find, if you're trying to get a demo done or if you're trying to find the right coach, you need to ask the right questions. You need to do your due diligence. And we worked with everybody. We got a lot of input from a lot of people. And we came up with a set of best practices and things that you should really think about when you're looking for a coach or a demo producer or a coach / demo producer. That make any sense? Okay. All right.
I'm so having fun reading the chat room. Sorry. Just forget I'm here.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that's it. Yeah, shoot them all. Well, I that's probably not a bad idea. But here are some of the things that we came up with. First off, honestly evaluate a student's abilities in a fair and objective manner without regard to monetary gain. I think that people need to understand that when you're looking for a coach, it's got to be somebody who really cares about the people they work with. And we know a bunch of people who are like that. And I know a lot of people who I've never heard of before who are calling themselves voiceover coaches and charging a lot for it. So that's something you really need to understand and get recommendations from people who know what is a good, you know, coach or demo producer. Two, to be a demo producer or a coach, be fully honest and specific with students about the prospects of securing future work in the voiceover industry and not speak in generalities. And I think we all understand that one too. You can't, anybody who says you're going to make $1 million in voiceover, unless you're Fred Melamed, who's probably maybe making that much, I don't know. We're not going to ask him. Well, maybe he'll tell us. It is a business. You can make a lot of money at it if you're very aggressive and you're very talented and you have everything it takes to do that. And a lot of it is just being in the right place at the right time. So anyone saying you can do this and I'm going to get you there, they're full of baloney. It's just pretty simple. Communicate students' abilities to them in a fair and objective manner based on specific performance criteria. Very important. When being engaged by a student, state the basis of all fees in writing. Sometimes it gets kind of nebulous. Number five, never rush a student into producing a professional voiceover demo until both coach and student are reasonably convinced that the student is ready to compete in the professional marketplace, and not tell the student they are ready simply to get them to pay more money for coaching or produce a demo. That's a long sentence, but I think it makes a lot of sense. You're trying to get a demo. You want to hear this guy's own tape. You want to hear what he's done for other people. And who are these people, and are they successful, or is it just a bunch of people that they're tossing out, what we like to call a demo mill? And that's something, I think that's an important thing that we need to know, especially if you're looking to produce a demo. And number six, not accept referral fees or kickbacks from demo producers, talent agents, casting directors, or anyone else to which a student might be referred for services, unless full disclosure is made to the student regarding such referral fees and the student consents, preferably in writing. It's a little bit confusing, but I think it makes a lot of sense. Number seven, if a student's demo is produced in-house, have the demo match the student's true and current abilities, meaning the demo will not be overproduced so that it misrepresents what the student can actually do if hired to do a professional session or if called in by other professionals such as a casting agent or talent agent based on their demo. You got to be able to do what you do professionally when you do it professionally, not just on a demo. You can't hide it when you're out in front of a bunch of people and in front of a microphone. It can't be overproduced. It should be highlighting you, not the production, at least according to some people. Here's an important one, and I think this is something that is really riling me too, and that is refrain at all times from acting as a talent agent for students, explicitly or implicitly offering to procure work for students, understanding that this is an inherent conflict of interest. I mean, I'll take you on as a student, but I'll also act as your agent. Should send up a big red flag.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, do you have time to answer a couple of questions that have percolated out of the chat room?
Absolutely.
Should we take like a 2 or 3 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we weren't planning on it, but you know, why not? Yeah. Sergeant Sill says, where do you see the organization in the long term?
In the long term, we see it growing and growing and growing, and everybody's seeing that it is a valuable asset to the industry, that we become the voice of the industry, that as a group, as a community, we stand on the same platforms. We'll probably argue about things. We'll probably have discussions about it, but we want to be able to set policy based on what we think is best for the industry, based on what everybody thinks. It's going to be very, very democratic. And I think those who have joined already, and we have over 120 members so far, they'll tell you we listen to what they have to say.
Right. Jay Sawyer. Why not come up with a list of legit coaches and demo producers? And Roy follows that up with, how do you do that? Who's to say who's legit? How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, then you're starting to fall into endorsement. It's caveat emptor, folks. I mean, it's a marketplace. Do your own due diligence.
Yeah.
You know, we're giving you the guidelines, and those are the things that you should probably follow on that.
And then Ann Richardson says, Dan, is number seven a coach's responsibility? Is number seven beef with broccoli?
No, it's the shaky beef.
Oh, okay.
A little bit of garlic.
And how's the brisket, says Jay.
That's right.
Dan, is number seven a coach's responsibility or the student's responsibility? Do you remember what number seven is? Is that in front of you?
Yes, it's right in front of my nose here. If a student's demo is produced in-house, have the demo match the student's true and current abilities. That's the coach's responsibility.
Okay.
They should know if somebody's got what it takes to do that.
Yep.
All right.
Cool.
So that's what Wovo is about. This is just one issue. I mean, we're going to take on a bunch of other things, but this was, I wrote an editorial about that in our monthly newsletter this month. And, it's an issue that I'm particularly itchy about, and I'm sure a lot of other people are too.
Maybe every month we'll have like a Wovo thing, or like a Wovo check-in, or another, you know, something like that. Some kind of recurring thing.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah. Creating the show right here on the spot.
That's right.
Anybody taking notes? Because I'll forget. I forget. I said
write that on.
I already forgot what I just said.
Yeah, okay. I remembered it. Give me 5 minutes. It'll just be drifting off into the hole.
Right.
Happens when you get to be my age. Anyway, hey, by the way, you got your clicker, George?
I do.
Okay.
Maracas.
These were very popular at FAFCON, and we have a bunch of them. They are the official East West Audio Body Shop clicker. So if you make a mistake, instead of going beep, or something like that. You can just click that. $5 a piece, and they're yours. And we have them in red, purple, green.
It's going to be whatever color we put in the back.
Right.
Yeah.
$5. Send us your email address. Actually, we should just have them. Can we do it on the site?
Yeah, well, I'll put up a PayPal link, you guys, and then you can just drop it in there, and your email, your mailing address will be part of the PayPal. Well, we'll ask you to put your mailing address in there when you check out. So I'll work on that tonight after the show, after I put Ella to bed.
Okay, excellent. All right. Well, we've got Widom's World coming up, and then we've got the world of Fred Melamed, who's going to be great. I can't wait to have our talk with him, and I know you guys can't either. So stay right where you are. We'll be right back here on East West Audio Body Shop, so don't you go away.
Now, back to East West Audio Body Shop, where every week, it's Apollo 13.
Not this week. Well, so much for that.
Hey, so you're supposed to pretend that was intentional.
Oh.
Didn't we discuss that before the show? Oh, no, never mind.
No, I don't remember that particular part. But, by the way, if you want to join World Voices Organization, and I know lots of you, lots of our viewers are our members, all you got to do is go to worldvo.org, and it says, join us. Just click on that and follow the process. It's $49 to annual membership and $25 application fee, and well worth it. You get to be part of our voice, and I think that's an important thing to be. Anyway, let's move on to your stuff. I've taken up too much time as it is.
Oh, it's okay. That's the great part about being the live, you know, the first section of the show. You get to just go and go until you run out of steam.
Been waiting 115 episodes for that.
That's right. But this time, that's a shot at Dan. I don't want to look at you. There we go. That's better. Thank you very much. I'm talking to myself. I'm talking to the TD. I'm the TD. I'm the audio. I'm everything. Anyway, you guys have probably heard about the Widom's World series I've started doing for Edge Studio, and it has a little bit of a feel, kind of like the Dan's Tip of the Week. I just answer questions. So people email in questions to Widom's World at edgestudio.com, and I answer them. So this is I picked this video because it's not terribly long. They can tend to get, you know me, they can be tend to get a little on the long side, 8 minutes, 10 minutes. This one's a little bit shorter, but it's just sort of a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I love people telling people this, but if it sounds good, it is good. So check this out.
Hi, this is George Widom reporting for Widom's World. You probably might be able to hear in my voice that I've got a cold. Coming on week two right now, fighting a sinus infection. Oh, it's a nightmare. But slowly starting to feel a little bit better day by day. Last week's post definitely brought up some interest in figuring out how do you reduce noise floor. Now that we know how to calculate it, or at least come up with a figure based on peak noise floor values, how do you deal with the problem? Noise floor can be caused by numerous different things in your recording environment. It can either be caused by something outside of your equipment, so that would be ambient noise, structure noise that's from inside your building, noise from outside your building, humming from vans, air conditioning units, old refrigerators, anything that creates vibration. And if you're in a multi-unit building, like an apartment or a condo, you're going to have it much worse than most people with a single-dwelling home, because there's machinery attached to that building, and it's vibrating the entire building and resonating the whole time. So a lot of the noise that most people have that increases their noise floor readings is often rumble, which is really low frequency noise. And the good news is a lot of the time that can be removed using an EQ setting, what we often call a high pass filter, set at between 80 and 100 hertz that will very effectively remove most of that low frequency noise. But you may also have just environmental noise, or just the sound of your computer in the same room with your microphone, the fans of the computer, the hard drives. If you have a hard drive sitting up on a desk, that can be humming and resonating with the desk, which then the microphone picks up. So all of these things contribute to the noise. These are all things that are outside of that the microphone is acoustically picking up. You know, it's hearing like your ear does. But there's also issues with the equipment itself. So if your microphone is not very sensitive, so that it needs a lot of gain to boost the signal, that means you have to run your mic preamp at a really, really high setting. And chances are, if you find yourself having to do that, it oftentimes will amplify the self noise of your system, which is usually heard as sort of a hiss or a whoosh, kind of a white noise sound. So those issues are dealt with by either, one, upgrading equipment, two, setting up proper gain staging. So if you have a mic preamp, a mixer, and say an M-Box, you have got sometimes up to 5 or 6 different places to adjust volume and gain settings. And if that's not done right, it'll increase noise dramatically. Or it could just be that the noise is within acceptable limits and it's not worth worrying about. If your noise is below, say, 45 dB or so, you can many times kind of get away with using a very minimal amount of what we call downward expansion or noise gate that will take the ambient noise floor of minus 45 and, through clever processing, reduce it to, say, minus 55. So if you do it in a subtle way, it won't be noticeable. And it'll just reduce the apparent noise floor. But this, I would say, would be one of the last resorts. You should really try to solve it from the source. And if it's just something you can't get away with, you just don't have the budget right now to upgrade the equipment or deal with the noise issues, worst case scenario, you can use a denoising tool like what comes with Audacity. And it's a little bit of a blunt instrument. Sometimes it makes some artifacts, but you know, sometimes it may be the only way you can get a clean enough sounding recording for the client's needs. So hope that's helpful. And if you have any more ideas for me, I'd love to get them. Send them over to widdumsworld@edgestudio.com. And I'll see you guys next week.
Wow, you know, of all the clips I could choose to run for our first Widdum's World segment, I couldn't have. I was so sick during that week when I shot that, and I'm watching this going, oh my god, this is awful. But I picked it because it was one of the shorter ones, because I tend to, well, I get into some detail, but we'll run more and more of those each every other week. I think we'll. Yeah, I like the idea of us, you know, sharing the load so Dan can have a little more time to do his tip of the weeks. And if you guys hate it, tell me. We'll stop running them, but we'll keep doing that for a while. Anything that I said on that video that we haven't already said on this show at least 10 times, Dan?
I mean, really? Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, you know. I mean, we follow these forums and we get a lot of questions, and we do have a lot of questions this week.
Yeah,
I mean, we have a lot of questions in our Facebook page and our G Plus page, mm-hmm. and people are asking, what should I do about this? What should I do about that? And what microphone should I use? And it's like, it is what it is, and I think people need to learn it is what it is. We know what it's not supposed to sound like, mm-hmm. and if as long as it doesn't sound like it's not supposed to sound like, it's probably okay.
Right, which is the inverse way of saying if it sounds good, it is good.
Exactly.
It's basically what that is.
I mean, I was copying the Cliff Notes. I had to rephrase it.
You know? Right. But, yeah, I mean, people in the chat room are talking about denoising tools, and they're also talking about the fact that I needed to have more energy in my video. Yes, I know.
Yeah. It'll be better next time.
I'm telling you, the other ones are better. I wanted to have somewhere to go from here. I didn't want to start with the best one and set the bar too high. I wanted to start, you know, with the bar a little lower. But no, I mean, there are better denoisers than Audacity. It's one that's free and it can be effective, but in almost all cases, it ends up adding artifacts that are really obvious. I mean, I just sent Dan a file today from a client who were trying to get by using a pretty lousy natty USB microphone. Yeah. And trying to make it usable. And the recording itself sounds good because it was inside a studio suit. And, you know, acoustically it sounds good.
Oh, that sounded fabulous.
But the noise floor is, you know, just it's pretty bad. And we're trying to polish a turd a bit, you know. And iZotope does that better than just about anything I've ever seen. The iZotope RX software. So
right.
If you do have to clean up something a little bit, that might be a good tool. But any of these tools, you got to use them. It's like seasoning, man. Just right. A little bit.
Just the right amount,
man. A little bit too much. And it just gets really bad. Really bad.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's time we get to our guest in a few minutes here.
Yep. Because I know he's hanging out in the chat room.
He's
gluttons for punishment. Well, maybe he left. All right, good. He left.
Yeah,
he saw what you jokers were talking about. He got out of there.
That's it. I'm out of here. All right. Anyway, Fred Melamed will be joining us in just a minute here at East West Audio Body Shop. I know you're all here. You can't wait to hear from him. Neither can we. So we'll be right back after this.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his helmet.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, Georgia set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
And he did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
Now back to EWABS with Dan and George.
No, it's George and Dan.
No, it's not. It's Dan and George.
George and Dan.
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 George and Dan.
Dan and George.
George and Dan.
Dan and George.
George and Dan. Dan and George.
Yeah, we're not. You got in there first, so I guess it is George and Dan.
It is tonight. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, our guest tonight is somebody who is just exceedingly accomplished at what we do. I mean, a graduate of Yale Drama School and Yale Repertory Theater, lots of movies and lots of television, but he's got a voice that we all recognize. And like a lot of them, it's like, whose voice is that? You know, I keep confusing him for Will Lyman and a few other people. But George, do you have that queued up so we can establish the voice and then we can get Fred in here?
You got it.
All right.
Once you had to fly to get Eagle Snacks Honey Roast Nuts.
This is your pilot speaking. We're all out of Eagle Snacks.
Fortunately, all that's changed.
In many ways, it looks and feels like nothing we have ever built. In many ways, it looks and feels like everything we've ever built. The all-new Mercedes-Benz. C-Class.
Dawn at the track, where speed and heat work relentlessly to break down motor oil. This is where we put Quaker State motor oil to the ultimate test, where we make sure Quaker State measures up to our standards and yours. Panasonic, the future of office automation. Advanced equipment with an extraordinary concept. the easier the better. Panasonic Genesis copiers. Like our typewriters, computers, and peripherals, the easier the better.
Typewriters?
All right.
That was an old one.
I love that. That's cool. That's cool.
Fred Melamed, welcome to East West Audio Body Shop.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm delighted to be with you.
And we're delighted to have you with us. You're a very popular guy these days, mostly because of the movie you've been in. But I guess we'll start off. I guess the best way to really describe you is as an actor's actor. You're extremely accomplished. You've done a lot of really great stuff. We said you went to drama school at Yale, which is, I think, way beyond what most of us would ever get the chance to do. Did you want to be a film actor or a stage actor, or really what was your intention when you started off in the acting world?
Well, I think like everybody in my generation, I was affected by movies and loved movies, but I was trained only in stage acting. The time when I went to Yale, from 78 to 81. I got out in 1981. It was a graduate program. There was no training in any other discipline besides stage acting. The presumption was that if you were a good stage actor, that, of course, film and television acting should be easy, which isn't really true. But that was what they thought. So I kind of didn't know. It's funny. I've had a strange trajectory. I got out of school in 81. I got a part on Broadway in a play called Amadeus right after that. And I was in that for a long time, for 16 months. And during that period, I had terrible, terrible stage fright. I mean, so bad that I could not think of anything else other than struggling with all my might to stay on stage for the duration of the show. This went on for so long that I had to resort to taking drugs, and it was a big mess. And I thought, oh, this is horrible. You know, here I am. I went to drama school. People said, don't be an actor. And I said, I'll show you. I became an actor. And I thought, oh, God, I can't stand this. An 8-show week. I cannot do this. And this was 82. And I had an agent who happened to be very big in voiceovers, an agent called Harry Abrams in New York. So I said, well, Harry, I'd like you to represent me for voiceovers. He said, well, look, you know, they don't like people with nice voices. They want people with voices that cut through. I said, well, let me just have a chance. So he said, okay. So I was very lucky, and I got a couple of big things out of the box. I got Mercedes-Benz, and I got Conoco Oil, a big oil company. So I started off kind of with a bang, and I kind of retired from being an actor in the usual sense, because I just didn't, I couldn't, to be a good actor, you have to expose certain parts of yourself and visit parts of yourself that I was not willing to do for some reason at that point. And that went on for a good number of years. And I was making quite a bit of money for a young single guy doing voiceovers. So that was all I did for about 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, so you decided you wanted to do voiceovers. Was it just a matter of getting in front of the microphone and being directed? Or did you find that you had your own technique for it, or what?
No, I always approached it as an actor, essentially as an actor, which is the way I still approach it. And the way I sort of, you know, when people ask, or there are a few people that have wanted to work with me, I try and get people to approach it that way, too, just because it's the way that I know how to do it. I don't think there's any one way to do it, but it's the way that I'm familiar with. What I mean by that is, well, let me start off. You said something very interesting in the earlier part of the show that I completely agree with. We were chatting before. I think people getting into this oftentimes get their minds clouded with stuff that isn't really as important as they think, like what kind of microphone should I have? How much money should I spend on soundproofing? What should I use for my recording stuff? Should I have a lot of variation in my tape? Who should I take? All that stuff is important at some level, but it's really secondary to the basic question, which is, how do I be really good at this? What do I do to approach this so that my reading somehow gets to people? That's the point. We hear television and radio all day long. Most of it's a good reason to hear it.
Skype's getting pretty glitchy.
Yeah.
Why?
It's dropping out pretty bad. Let me call you back, Fred, because this is the way Skype goes once in a while. I'll call you right back.
Dum, dum,
yay.
Da, da, da.
And wouldn't luck have it, one of my clients is panicking and texting me during the show.
Maybe that's what's going on.
No, it's just text messages, but... Only Adam back here. So I'm like triple tasking. Not just double multitasking, but...
Yeah, you're off the clock with those guys, though.
Not when he's losing a job with Conan O'Brien. I'm not.
Oh, crap!
Yeah. Hang on here. Have we got Fred back?
I think so.
I'm back now. Can you hit the video button?
And there he is.
It was just acting like the Skype bandwidth just died away. So we're good now. Pick up where you left off best you can.
Too long a limit.
Right.
So,
throw another quarter.
Anyway, so I approach it as an actor, meaning I ask myself, who is the person talking, meaning me? It's a character. You know, it's an attitude. Familiar with, famously said that it's not really about your voice, it's about your mind. It's about the way you approach things.
I think what we should do, Fred, is for the moment, turn off your video feed.
Voice makes a lot of
Turn off your camera because you're losing bandwidth. The kids all must be.
But you don't have to have.
On the kids must be all BitTorrenting movies or something right now.
Yeah, now it's working. Tell you what, why don't I turn off my camera?
Go for it, Fred.
Everybody, go. You're on.
Okay, you want me to put my camera back on or leave it?
No, sir. You're fine now. Please proceed.
Anyway. On the same page that we were talking about, people say, it's like, do you need a beautiful voice? Well, is it important to be beautiful looking to be an actor? If it were important, then I would never have a career. You can be a certain kind of actor if you're good looking, and you can be a certain kind of voiceover person if you have a beautiful voice, but you don't need a beautiful voice. It's your approach to it that makes you who you are, and that's really what the message I try and instill in people who really want to pursue this.
Right. Tell you what, I'm going to turn off my camera. You turn yours back on.
Yeah, we'd rather see Fred.
Yeah, I know I'm gorgeous, but you know, you're the star.
That's better.
Okay. Proceed.
So I approach it as an actor, meaning simply that I ask myself, what is my attitude about the thing that I'm talking about, and the people that I'm talking to? There's always a subtextual message. There's the text, which is the words, but there's always something beneath that. And it's not general. If you say it should be exciting, or it should be moving, or it should be funny, or it should be energetic, that's way, way too general. It has to be, from my point of view, far more specific than that. Does that make sense
at all? Yes, it does. Absolutely.
You know, you don't want to do an imitation of an imitation of an imitation. Of somebody. You know what I mean by that? You know, it's true that there are many people working who do movie trailers that say, a lonely woman, a desperate man, you know, all that kind of stuff. You hear that 9 zillion times, and you hear, hey, we're going to be great. Let's build all that kind of, you know, all the tropes that people make fun of are all true. There's imitation in everything that we learn.
No, it's the bandwidth on Fred's end. Fred, just kill your camera. That fixed questions. The problem last time. Sorry, Fred. It's just your internet bandwidth is choking off. It's live, everybody. That's the way it goes.
We won't win awards for technical stuff, but...
How's that? Is that better?
Yes, sir.
That's better.
Good. Okay. The voice is the better part anyway.
That's right.
That's right. Get a little closer to the mic and
yeah. So that's what I try and do is approach it as an actor, meaning what is my attitude about what I'm talking about and also about the people that I'm talking to. And it's not important that I express that to them literally, but that I know what it is as I approach it. Acting is acting with your full self, that is acting in front of a camera, is a far more tiring and difficult process, but in a certain sense, it's also far more rewarding, at least for me, although I like them both. The money is much easier doing voiceovers for the amount of work that you do. I'll tell you that for sure.
We like to hear that.
Dan?
So, yes.
Okay, just making sure you're still there.
I'm still here. We're just, you know, we're trying to deal with the technical issues.
Yeah.
Now, do you have your own home studio right now, Fred?
I do have a home studio. In fact, I only recently, in the last 5 months, have I moved here to California. I used to live for many years in New York City, and then on the east end of Long Island in Montauk. I was actually the first guy that I knew on the East Coast to have a home studio. I had my first home studio in 1991. Joe Cipriano here in L.A., where I now live, I think was the first guy that I knew had a West Coast home studio, I believe.
Wow.
That I knew. But I've had a home studio for over 20 years. For about 8 years, I was the voice of CBS Sports, meaning the guy who said, the NFL on CBS and all that stuff. And I would come on live during games to do updates and scores and things like that from my house. So that was why I built a home studio, so that I wouldn't have to go into the studio. I could be out in Montauk, where I had a house, and do the Sunday games live. And that was great. So I've had a home studio for many, many, many years. We were talking about home studios before. It's interesting. When home studios first came into the current sort of popularity that they now enjoy, people thought that we're going to have a lot of great voiceover artists suddenly appear. And in fact, that hasn't happened. We were talking about this earlier. As I said, it's like what happened in MIDI about 25 years ago. People said, well, now that the recording equipment and synthesizers are available for people, we're going to have all these geniuses, these Mozarts springing up out of garages all over the country. And that didn't really happen. What happened was you got a great block of mediocre sort of effort that filled up the channels, but still very, very few people came to the top who were really excellent. The same thing is true, I think, with home studios. It allows entrance for many more people, which means that people that become great can get in more easily. But it's still hard to be really, really good.
Absolutely. But you got to understand how to do stuff technically. But I guess after many years of being in the studio, you know, where it's always the engineer is placing the mic for you and stuff like that, did you have to relearn some of that stuff yourself, or did you already understand it, or did you have any experience in broadcasting at all?
I did. When I was in college, I worked for an NPR station when I was in college as a classical DJ. So I learned a little bit of technical stuff. Those days, people cut tape. This was before digital stuff was ubiquitous. So I learned how to cut tape and produce on tape, and I learned mic technique and things like that. From the early Macs, I had a Lisa, which is the first Mac iteration, first popular Mac iteration. So I was always into that stuff. But I did have to learn, you know, how to do it, and I'm still not, I'm okay at it. I'm serviceable, but I'm not, you know, people who are really good are fast at editing, fast with stuff like that. When ISDN came in, that made it much easier for people like me, because essentially you could hook up with any studio anywhere, and you didn't have to do much technically other than just know how to place the mic and make sure you're getting an okay signal.
All right. Well, our audience has been chomping at the bit to ask you a few questions, and this has been fascinating, and we've been waiting to hear what you had to say about it, and you've been right on about it. But a couple of our viewers here, J.S. Gilbert asks, Fred, that being your name, do you audition much? Are you finding that the ad agencies are crowdsourcing auditions, and do you think this is impacting you?
I'm not sure what you mean by crowdsourcing auditions exactly. Do you mean what we used to call the garage guys with auditions? Is that what you mean, like crowdsourcing?
Well, it's stuff coming off of VoiceBank, and they'll throw out an audition to hundreds and hundreds of people, and the agents are, you know, throwing their own people into it.
Right.
And that's what we mean by crowdsourcing. It's simply a matter of the internet being able to access many, many people.
I think that was actually more prevalent a few years ago than it is now. I think there were some very major spenders who thought that they could economize by casting things non-union, going or using Canadian talent in some instances, or just trying to cast things in non-union states. And they did that for a while and ultimately were disappointed with the results. So I think for the most part, that's not a big factor in the things that I'm in consideration for. On the other hand, there are things that I don't do very much of where a lot of that work is gone. Audiobooks, for example, there's a huge amount of work done on audiobooks. I don't do audiobooks very often because it's a lot of work for what I consider to be very poor money. So I have to really, really love the book to want to record it. But I have many friends who do it and who are great at it. And a lot of that stuff is now submitted directly through the internet and picked up that way. And those people have home studios rather than going into studios. And they often edit as well as record themselves, and they sell finished products to the various outlets for recorded books. Right. But the kind of stuff that I'm usually doing, major advertisers, you know, with large accounts, they still go mostly for agencies for breakdowns of that kind of stuff. I'm in the vast majority of cases, I'm auditioning for voiceovers. Once in a while, I have an offer that's not where I don't audition. People just know me and they want me to do something. But in the preponderance of cases, I am auditioning for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, and I think JS was asking about union national TV spots that are getting read by like 2,000 actors. And I mean, it's kind of hard to compete unless, of course, you're as good as you are, which always puts you at the top of the list. Let's see here. Suzanne Roberts asks, if he had to recommend one book on acting or voice acting, what would it be?
I lost your audio.
Okay, you're back.
Okay, you're back.
Well, to be honest with you, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
I'm woefully ignorant about books that exist about such things that are instructional. I know people who are talented who instruct people. I can't say that I know. I can give you a book that's anecdotally very good, but it's not an instruction book. My friend Joe Cipriano, who I just mentioned a moment ago, has written a new book, which was just recently published, which really tells you what it's like to be a voiceover artist, both as a beginner and as a very much celebrated, you know, successful guy. But that's not an instructional book. I can't tell you a good instructional book because I don't know the field, to be honest with you.
All righty. Randy K. asks, do you miss New York? Why the move, professional or personal?
That's a good question. I don't too much miss New York. We didn't live in New York City for the last...
We'll just give it a minute to rebuff.
Boys and a wife. And we lived in Montauk, which is a little sort of fishing village on the east end of Long Island. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah, there's just dropouts every once in a while, but it catches up.
Good. Anyway, we were living out in Montauk. The reason that we moved, that I moved, we all moved to California, was a dual reason. I have one son with autism, and he was in a school out there in Montauk in which he was doing wonderfully, but he got too old for it. He aged out of it, and there wasn't a good alternative out there where we were living, so we would have had to move somewhere. So since I was often coming to Los Angeles for work, we decided to move here and see how we all liked it. And so far, it's been very good. So it was a combination of needing to move because of my son's school situation and the fact that there's a lot more work of the kind of stuff that I'm now doing out here for me. Television, certainly. Not so much movies. Movies are done all over. But in television, there's much more activity out here.
Yeah. Now, this is one I was going to ask you about, and then our good friend Paul Strequerta came up with it as well. This is, you dubbed several other actors' entire performances, including villain Don Cabeza in Roland Joffe's 1986 The Mission with Robert De Niro. How did you approach that?
I wish I did a better job on it, to be fair. I approached it by looking at the character, what actually happened in that instance was the actor, I don't want to name the actor whose work I actually wound up dubbing, but he and I were competing for the role, to act the role, and they wound up choosing him for the role. And when the performance was finished and on film, they were unhappy with certain aspects of it. So they hired me, even though they hadn't chosen me, to replace his voice within the movie.
Wow.
So that's what happened. I tried to do it as I would have done the role, but that didn't quite work with what he was physically. Yeah. So when I look at it, it's of course that was a long time ago, but I wish that I wish that instead of doing my performance, I wish I had tried to suit my performance to what he was doing better. That's what I should have done, to be frank.
Yeah. Now here's another one. It was also from Paul, and this is another one I wanted to ask about, and that is with Grand Theft Auto. you've done some stuff with that, and what do you think about the violence in a game like that? I mean, and there was lots of discussion that they were actually using gang members, you know, to do some of the voices for that. What are some of your thoughts about doing video games along those lines?
I mean, I guess I have sort of a mixed opinion about it. I think of it as a work of art. It's certainly a highly commercial work of art, but it's a work of art. So I'm not much for sort of skewing the artistic decision making based on considerations of what constitutes unacceptable behavior. I think people should be free to buy what they want. I also know that young people, even though that's a game that's designed for people that are not young, young people do have access to those kinds of games. I have young kids myself. For me, it's not a big issue. I don't think that it's, for me, that game is a sort of a crazy joyride. I don't know about the people that they hired who are actual gang members. I don't know if that's really true or not, but those are produced like major movies. They have budgets rivaling big time movies. They're hugely complicated, and hugely expensive, big productions, and fun to do, interesting to do.
Yeah. Here's a really interesting question from Shelley Avellino. She's British. She lives in the U.S., and she's finding it very difficult to break into the commercial aspect of voiceover with her British accent. And she says she hears lots of different views about this. What would be your ideas about breaking into this market, and do you think that there is a market in the U.S. for the British voice?
I certainly think there is a market for the British voice because I'm often asked to approximate a British accent. I think everybody knows, people who've seen In a World and others probably know that it's much harder for women than it is for men. The unhappy fact is that there's just less work for women than there is for men in our industry. But there is a significant amount of work for women. I think the wise thing to do, if you could do it, would be to find an agent who would represent you as somebody whose accent was British and who specialized in that, if you could. I mean, that would be a wise thing to do. But I certainly think there would be enough call for it doing things. I would think so.
I know I have a client who is Australian, so she's got that lovely accent, and she works very successfully here in the U.S. doing VO for the U.S. market. So it's definitely about marketing that specific accent as a niche type of, it is your voice. So there's going to be campaigns in the U.S. that like that accent. I mean, there's definitely markets for that stuff.
Yeah, certainly. And not every British actor is good at it, but I know many British actors who do impeccable American accents that are completely undetectable, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if you have an opportunity to also work without the accent, work on eliminating the accent, even though it's your native accent, that would increase your opportunities as well if you can do it.
Versatility, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's super, super crucial. I always seem to hear agents talking about we're looking for people who are versatile.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what end of things you're in. I mean, I don't think – when people often say, well, should my tape show a great number? Should my demo – I say tape as if we use tape anymore. should my demo have a great deal of versatility on it? I'm not – unless you're doing cartoon voices, that kind of thing, I don't think a demo has to show a great number of colors, because the truth is that they can hire people who hire different people who do different things well.
Right.
But I do think if you do a certain kinds of reads well, it's good to have the ability to do it with and without an accent.
Maybe I'm thinking more in the context of attracting an agent in the first place. Maybe that's what I'm thinking more of.
Certainly.
Right.
Yeah. JS also asks, does working on camera give you any advantages as far as working in voiceover is concerned? Now, there's a lot of us, I mean, I've done a little bit of on-camera work, but a lot of people who are in voiceover have never done any on-camera work. Do you think that that gives you an advantage, maybe a little bit more visualization in how you approach stuff?
I think it gives you a significant advantage, not in any stylistic sense, but just because people know who you are. I'm on a show. One of the television shows that I do now is a show on CBS called The Crazy Ones, on which I play a character, a sort of obnoxious, full of himself voiceover actor called Fred Melamed.
Typecasting.
Unbelievably coincidental. You know, you would never think in a million years they would use that name, but they did. I do think that people being familiar with you does help a great deal. I really do think so. It helps both in getting you opportunities for jobs and also in negotiating. Having that little bit of notoriety is a useful tool, without a doubt.
Clearly. Now, you've worked with some great directors and some great stars. Like, we know of your performances on Curb Your Enthusiasm. What's it like working with Larry David? And is it just totally professional on the set, or is there a lot of – is it because it's such a real type of show, what's that really like doing a show like that?
Is it nonstop gag reels or what?
Yeah.
It's total fun. It's really, really fun. I didn't know at the time – I've been a fan of that show for years and watched it, you know, with my wife for, 4 or 5 years on HBO. But I didn't realize, after all those years of watching it, that show is utterly unscripted.
Yeah, it seems it.
That show works is you get a little piece of paper and it says, in this scene, you're Larry's psychiatrist and you billed him for some hours that he wasn't in the office. You met him someplace and you billed him. And that's all it says. And everything else you make up.
Pure improv.
Wow.
Right. And you know, the first 3 or 4 times you do it, you're going like, well, I billed you because I was, I felt I should, you know. And then by the 8th or 9th time you do it, you're fluid with it, you know what you're doing, and, you know, it comes out, hopefully it comes out well. But it was that, doing that experience was really, really fun. And I happened to have the good luck to play a psychiatrist, and having had many years myself on the couch, I was familiar with the conventions of psychiatry. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if this guy was like a horrible name dropping psychiatrist, this particular character? I just made that up. I thought it would be funny. And so I just did it without telling Larry. And he started cracking up in the middle of us doing the scene. He was laughing. Had to keep breaking, so he would. And I thought, oh, this is great! I made him laugh, and we wound up using most of it with him turned, you know, downstage. So it was really, really fun, and you know, that was a memory that I very much cherish doing that. And because of that, I met the guys that write for him and also direct his series. Who I also worked with on a Sacha Baron Cohen film with Ben Kingsley. I got to do that, which was great. And it led to many other, you know, very, very enjoyable things for me.
Yeah. Well, it's like everything else. It's networking. It's, you can be great at what you do, but you got to know all the other people who need you to do what they need you to do.
Yeah. I'm surprised having, you know, been a recent transplant here to Hollywood, at how small it all is. Everybody kind of knows everybody, and it's a much smaller world than I had ever realized it was. And that if you happen to be on the right side of that, it's very good.
Very nice. Yeah. And you've also worked with the Coen brothers, which must have been rather fascinating.
It was great. That was another truly great experience. I was very surprised in working with the Coen brothers because, you know, their movies are so beautifully constructed, so orchestrated, so kind of perfect. I was very shocked because you get a script and they like you to stick very tightly to the script, But within that, they kind of let you run. They don't. You don't get a lot of direction from them. They like actors who are creative and who kind of take things in directions that are unexpected. And so it was really, really fun to do that movie. I had a great, great time doing that movie. And that character was one of the characters I played in that Coen Brothers movie. It was a movie called A Serious Man. Every so often you get a character that you read in a script and you think, oh God, this is, I got to play this character. It's one of, you get maybe in your life, maybe four or five of these if you're lucky.
Right.
And you just think, what a great opportunity. And so that was one of those. And also the character that I played in A World, that the father character, same with Sam Soda, was also one of those where I just read it. I thought, man, I got to do this no matter what. It's so good.
Yeah. we've hardly talked about In A World too. What's been the reaction to that? I mean, in the voiceover world, we're all like, "Oh wow, a movie about us." But what's been your experience with it so far?
Oh, it's been wonderful. It's been people have embraced it. Both people in our business, when I say our business, I mean the voiceover business, and people from other walks of life. I was kind of surprised because I think Lake was too because. We thought of the voiceover world as kind of the backdrop for the story, but the story was rather universal. You know, it's about somebody who's discouraged, a daughter who's discouraged and kind of finds her way against the prejudices that exist to succeed. But what we found was that people are really fascinated, even people that are outside it are really fascinated by this little world of voiceover. It's a big subject of interest for people. And I guess maybe it's a fantasy of a lot of people. So that was quite shocking to us, that people were really, really fascinated by the world of voiceover and how it all works and the fact that there are jealousies and rivalries and there's a lot of money to be made and there's a lot of insecurity. And it's rife with all those kinds of... It's just like it apes the real movie business, you know?
Really?
Every respect.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the real litmus was I brought my wife to that screening we had here at the ArcLight in Hollywood, and my wife is burned. She is burned out on the voiceover business, having been married to a husband now who's basically obsessed with the industry and running a business. She's kind of burned out, So the fact that I even got her to go was a small miracle, but she really did enjoy the movie. She was laughing and she was invested in the story. I could tell she was really enjoying it. And I was like, that's a real accomplishment because, to take a film that people are not, they don't understand, either they don't understand the subtext of the movie or whatever the characters are up to, or they don't even care and still get the movie. I mean, obviously that's a testament to you guys, your acting. And the writing, the writing was just fantastic, right? I mean, how great was that writing?
Fantastic. And, she wrote that, Lake Bell, who wrote stars in it, she wrote that when she was about 28 or 29 years old. She was really a kid. And she wrote that, and I just couldn't believe how good it was when I read it. And she's an enormous talent. She's actually writing another movie now, which I hope to take part in. We'll see what happens.
But it's too bad because she's so talented at writing, but she's so hideously ugly. Like, how can you stare at her throughout
it's interesting you say that because she's obviously very exotic and very beautiful.
Unbelievably girl,
but I think
beautiful.
To some extent, people have misunderstood her because of that. They put her in a certain box, which, it's kind of understandable, but the fact that what she really wants to do is write and direct. She wants to be, like the sort of modern day Woody Allen kind of person, and she's great at it. But the fact that she was so attractive and with that kind of exoticness, people didn't know what to do with her in Hollywood. She was getting kind of wacky best friend roles and things like that, which are great. But I mean, it's still not what she was kind of born to do. So that there's a situation where even though it being that attractive opened the door for her, it to some extent I think it's hard for people to take her seriously because she's that good looking in a way.
Well, JS thinks you're pretty easy on the eyes
the
too,
eyes
buddy.
Too.
So.
Extremely kind. That's because the camera's turned off.
Yeah. Well, wait, we're gonna get to our last question here. So why don't we try our cameras one more time here and take a risk.
All right, let's roll the dice, guys. Let's see if we can get a...
All right. But
yay, it's back.
Okay.
It's quick.
Yes. Last question. What is your advice for those at mid-level, that's the rest of us, wanting to get higher in the business? I mean, there's a lot of us that are I guess we refer to ourselves as lunch pail voice actors. We do an awful lot of e-learning, a lot of corporate narration, things along those lines. What is the thing, at least from your point of view, that would help somebody move up to the next level where it's really national flight spots and possibilities of doing documentary work and with all the networks and stuff?
Decide that you want greatness. I know that sounds corny, but it's what really is what makes the difference. You know, why does somebody become a teacher or a doctor or anything else? You don't become a teacher because you want to be an okay teacher, right? Or an okay doctor, treat people with colds and stuff. Be great at what you do. Have the confidence in your own work, your own abilities. And if you're not that confident in your own abilities, work to the point that you really become confident in them. You know you're great. You know you're great. And then just wail. Don't let anybody tell you you cannot, because you can. You truly can. But you have to decide that you won't accept being a paycheck player.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up pretty nice. We do have one more job for you, though. One of our sponsors, Harlan Hogan and VoiceOver Essentials. This is a new tradition we have on here. Whoever our guest is, we're going to ad lib a spot for his stuff. Now, what Harlan has is a website. He sells voiceover equipment, microphones. The porta booth, you have a porta booth yet? The headphones, the Harlan Hogan VO1A microphone. And if you were going to sell something like that on the air, not even knowing what it was, but if we just told you it's a great microphone, how would you present that to people?
With no copy? You mean I have to make the copy myself up?
You got to make it up yourself, yeah. That's the requirement.
You're ready? Ready? Yeah.
I'm ready.
There's nothing more powerful than the truth. Harlan Hogan Acoustics. They provide the true sound, the true voice, the true message.
Done. That's a wrap.
There you go, Harlan. Thank you, man.
It's not quite his. I know what he sells. It's not quite appropriate, but it's all I can come up with. 10 seconds.
That's not bad.
It'll end up on his website anyway. So,
thanks for helping us, Shil.
Absolutely.
By the way, let me say that those are good products. I don't have one because I have very good acoustics in my studio, but they work. They work for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for being with us, Fred. This has been an absolute treat. This is going to make the highlight reel, George.
Oh, that's for sure.
Which we still have to talk about. But thanks for being with us, and good luck with the continuation of people getting to see In a World, and good luck with all your future projects. I am so looking forward to seeing this film. And I say, I met this guy.
Thanks so much. I hope you enjoy it.
I'm sure I will. Fred Malamed joining us from Los Angeles. Anyway.
Have a good night, Fred.
Yes.
Take care, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. All right.
He's gone.
He's gone.
I dumped him off.
Okay.
Well, I let him go. He needs to go eat.
Yeah. And so do you eventually, too. boy, that was great. I mean, he gracious with his time, and the message is clear. You got to want to do this. You know, it's
you got to want it bad.
You got to want it bad.
You know, I played trumpet all through school. I played trumpet in grade school and high school. And, you know, I got by because I had just natural talent. I have a really good ear, and I was able to fake it, you know, man. But yeah. I always try to figure out, why am I not getting a lot better? And it was simply because I just realized I didn't want to practice. Like, if you don't want to practice your instrument or your craft of voice acting, how could you possibly get better, right? And that was the problem I had. And it took, you know, when your dad plays trumpet when you're growing up, you want to do the same thing. And, you know, you realize, well, it's because I don't love it. And you have to love doing this. You have to. That's the only way you're going to get better. So, you know, that's what you have to keep doing. And there you have it. Keep practicing that ukulele, buddy.
We're actually going to start a little ukulele orchestra.
We did it for my aunt's 60th birthday. Yeah. We did a surprise luau-themed birthday. It was unbelievable, man. It was so great. 10 of us on ukuleles was awesome.
A orchestra.
An orchestra, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to try and do that here in Buffalo. It should be different. Anyway,
let's wrap up the show. We'll do a little. We'll throw in John Florian's spot here, and then we'll jump back and do the
announcements. Don't go away quite yet. A little bit left.
Just one more minute.
Yeah.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Et voilà, this is East West Audio Body Shop with Dan Leonard in the East and George Whittam in the West. Merci. Et maintenant, back to the show.
Merci beaucoup. All righty. Well, we got a few announcements here. Now, this first one, Voices for Voices benefiting the Don LaFontaine VoiceOver Lab. You guys are... Boy, lots of fundraisers for that. So what's this one all about?
It's an expensive facility. Believe me, I know.
I know.
I designed the damn thing. Anyway, it's we've got a few of the actually we've got Bill Radner, who is one of the original the advisory board that helped fund the lab initially, who, by the way, Bill is one of the biggest champions of coaching. He keeps calling the lab, bugging the guy that runs, the guy that runs it, Eric. He keeps calling saying, when can I come in and coach? You know, Bill's awesome that way. But he'll be doing his Bobby Wood show. That is a one-man, 1 hour show that he wrote that was part of the Fringe Festival, which actually won at least one or two awards that I know of. It's fantastic. But anyway, he's going to do the show at the SAG Foundation in their theater. And if you buy tickets to see that show, those proceeds go to the lab. And the tickets for both shows, there's also another one. I'm sorry, I'm not good at doing this, but I don't want to read it line for line off the page. You guys can go to the website and get that. But his thing is on November 2nd or 7th, which is coming up in just a few days. And then on Sunday is James Arnold Taylor's Talking to Myself. And he's an animation voice. And so his show, I think it's kind of in the vein of Bob Bergen, where he talks about creating the characters, and it's going to be a show like that. And it's for the kids, actually. If you've got a kid 7 and up, you can bring your children to the show, and he's going to even have a few live characters there in person. And that's on November 10th at 3 p.m. And guess who's coming to the show with me as my date? Ella Whittam.
Oh,
I said, hey, my daughter's only 4 and a half, but would you make an exception for a fledgling voiceover talent, which I hope that she gets to be one someday? And they were like, absolutely. So I'm going to bring her along. I think that's going to be a blast. But if you do want to come and see either of these shows, the VIP couch seats up front are $35. General admission is $25. And if you do bring a child 7 to 18 years old, it's $15, but come check it out. And if you want more information, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's over at sagfoundation.org/voices4FOR voices. You can find it over there.
Yes. Alrighty. What else we got going on here? Well, who do we have coming up on the show?
Yeah, man, we've got a bunch of people. I mean, you know what? I am remiss because I didn't play the jingle. How could I forget?
We'll play the jingle.
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
Okay.
There we go. Sorry.
All right.
I had to get that in there.
Yeah. Next week, we've agreed that our good friend Wes Dooley will be on. We did an interview with him back in July, and if you really want to understand microphones, and not too technical. I mean, he's a very entertaining guy, and he talks about his business, and he talks about ribbon microphones and why ribbon microphones might actually be something you might want to think about for voiceover or something to have in your toolkit. But he also talks a little bit about mic technique, and we have a great interview with him next week, so do not miss that one either. What else we got coming up? We've got
we're gonna have a Soundstreet demo.
Great.
What we're going to do is Dan and I are going to record it in advance because of the technical challenges of demoing something that has audio streaming in both directions and all this stuff and capturing it. We're going to record it in advance because I want to be able to show both sides of the software so you guys can see and hear what both ends hear. But then we're going to, after we have that video together, we're going to show that, and then we're going to have a live Q&A with, I believe, Dan Caligore, the CEO of Soundstreak, as well as we may also have Yoni, who's like his basically their primary spokesperson, who actually is a techie guy too. So that's going to be cool. These dates are all kind of floating around. We're trying to nail everybody down, but all of this stuff is definitely coming up this month. And then November 18th, it looks like we got Joe Cipriano. All right. And he's going to come in. He wants to be here in person. Awesome.
That would be great.
And it's going to be fun.
Yeah, and so that's, and then we're trying and Roy, if you're still in there, we want to do a another Audio Masters Roundtable because those are always fun and entertaining and informative.
It should be the last Monday of the month,
yes,
the 25th. Yep,
that's when we're going to be doing that, and then it's going to be Hanukkah by then. That's and right. Thanksgiving.
It's going to be the year. It's going to go flashing past. And for the end of the year, we'll announce it tonight, but we do want to do another highlight show.
From 2013.
From 2013, because it was a lot of fun last year putting it together. So start sending in your ideas to ewabshop@gmail.com. And I will say that if you can be specific, you know what? It just popped into my head. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a spreadsheet on Google.
All right.
With columns. So there's like a time column, an episode column, a time column, and whatever it is that you want to feature. And I'll just make it an open spreadsheet and so that anybody can log in there and put your ideas in, and we'll share it on Google Plus or something. It'll be a Google spreadsheet. There you go. Right. That's what we'll do. Yeah. Your ideas in there. It'll make it so much easier for us to put the show together, and we'll be able to get a lot more content in that way.
Yeah. No, that was a fun show last year because we had a lot of great stuff last year. But we've had a lot of great stuff this year, too. 115 episodes. I can't believe we've been doing this for 2.5 years. It's going to be 3 years in March.
I know. It's freaky.
Wow. Anyway, so make sure you send in if something you thought was fabulous from this last year, make sure you you send that in to us.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got to thank a bunch of people. We have to thank Kathy Curran, of course, our producer. She got us Fred.
Yay, Catherine. She's all done right. a great job for this show.
So everybody give her a virtual hug for doing
that. For every great guest we get on, it's her that's making it happen. Thank you, Catherine. You're
thank
awesome.
Thank you, Catherine. We really appreciate it. Anthony Gettig and Jason Lawson and Lee Pinney for all their production assistance. And, of course, Mrs. Leonard and Mrs. Whittem.
Oh, yeah, they put up with us.
They put up with an awful lot. Yeah. Although, I must say, they are enjoying Monday nights a lot more than they were Sunday nights.
I think so, yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. And we seem to be having our Sunday night audience seems to be back. So
yay,
now that they realize we're actually on Monday nights.
Right. And I do want to thank our sponsors, Harlan Hogan, VoiceOver Extra, and, of course, Edge Studio. We really appreciate you. And if you're wondering why you're seeing commercials for VO Studio Tech, well, VO Studio Tech and Edge are still, we're all one business, but we haven't merged the brands. So we're going to be bringing spots to you guys from both companies over the time here. But thanks for
Southwest and AirTran.
Yeah, exactly. We're working on it. It's going to have a blue stripe, and then it's going to be all blue. I don't know, something like that. Yeah. And also, thank you to our perennial donor, Eric Aragone.
Eric Aragone.
You're the man, buddy.
We salute you.
Yeah, we need to do something special for him.
We'll send him a clicker.
100 of them. No. And please like us on Facebook, follow the Twitter feed at ewabs_show, and subscribe on YouTube. And if you like what you see on YouTube, click the little like button, leave some comments, you know, engage in the conversation. We'd love to see what you guys have to think about what we're doing.
Right. And we, of course, appreciate all you guys joining us in the chat room. This was a huge audience tonight.
This was great.
We like it when you're here live and you get to interact with us and stuff. And that's why we do the show. We do it for you, and we want to make sure that you guys get your questions answered. Were there any tech questions that we wanted to deal with tonight while we're still here?
Nah, I'm ready to go. Yeah. I'm ready to go. No, you know what? Tonight. Tech question. Never, or here's something. Okay. Never run the every week it's Apollo 13 spot before nothing goes wrong or something goes wrong.
Right.
Well, right? Because I ran that.
That one for last.
I ran that bumper right before we had Fred on. And then all hell broke loose. Everything went down the tubes at that point, right? Yeah. Everything was fine up until that moment.
We didn't panic. Just moved ahead, and everybody still enjoyed everything we had to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and all right. Well,
let's
hang it up and wrap it all into a nice little ball and roll it in the corner. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are
East West Audio Body Shop.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Arrivederci.